This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, back this Wednesday with another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime. Start off this week with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Alan Saxton matter, his story from October 20th, 1953. After that, it's Crime Club and Death at 710, their story from July 2nd, 1947.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you chewing enjoyment, presents for your listening enjoyment, John Lund as...
Johnny Dollar.
Stanley Mitchell, Dollar.
Oh, how are you, Mr. Mitchell?
I'm fine. Are you employed?
No, not since last Tuesday.
Then you can take an assignment.
Fast as you can give it to me.
Go to New York and see a Mr. Alan Saxton. He recently returned from Europe where he purchased a supposedly priceless painting. Supplied to our company for insurance on it.
You said supposedly priceless. Is there a doubt?
Yeah, big one. Several experts have examined the painting, claim it's a forgery. Saxton yelled foul all over the place. He paid $200,000 for the article.
Well, I do a little yelling myself.
A whole group of experts are going to give the painting every test there is, and if it stands up, we're obliged to insure it.
And if it doesn't, I leave before Saxton comes to a boil, huh?
That's about it.
I'll get right on it, Mr. Mitchell.
The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum bring you John Lund in a transcribed adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Friends, the makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum present these weekly adventures of Johnny Dollar because they know that millions of you enjoy Johnny Dollar. That's true of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, too. It's enjoyed by millions, day in and day out. People find that chewing on a smooth, delicious piece of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum somehow makes time pass more pleasantly. Whether you're working, driving, shopping, or just taking things easy, that good, tasty chewing gives you enjoyment and satisfaction. So always keep a package of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. And whenever you want a refreshing, delicious treat, chew a stick. You'll like it. You really will.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, Great Eastern Life Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Alan Saxton matter. Expense account item one, $21.65, train fare and incidentals between Hartford and New York City. I arrived at Grand Central late in the afternoon and went directly to a hotel where I registered and made arrangements to rent a car. Saxton resided in a quaint three-story house on an estate across the river in Jersey that looked impressive enough to be an annex to Fort Knox. An old cab butler met me at the door and led the way into a mahogany and leather study where I was left to wait for the master of the house.
Mr. Dollar?
That's right.
Glad to know you. Mitchell of your company called, said you'd be down.
Yes, sir.
Well, sit down, sit down. A cigar?
No, thanks.
Aren't you a little premature?
How do you mean?
Well, there'll be no positive confirmation in my painting till after it's been examined, you know.
When will the examination take place?
Nasty cough.
Yeah, nasty.
Well, I'm going to turn the painting over to Mr. DeFarmer from the museum tomorrow morning. I imagine he'll have it for a day or so.
I understand you paid $200,000.
I sure did. 200,000 fat American dollars, Mr. Dollar. Have you any idea how long it takes to make $200,000, Mr. Dollar?
Well, that kind of depends on who's making it. Me, I start getting senile around $1.98.
Oh, Lord. If I keep hacking like this, I'll end up doing business in an oxygen tent. You like to see the painting, Mr. Dollar?
Sure.
Come on. Mr. Dollar, if I've been swindled, I'm going to cause more trouble than a hungry snake in a rabbit pen.
Who'd you buy the painting from?
Who? One of the biggest, most respectable dealers in Paris is all. You ever been to Paris, Mr. Dollar?
Yeah.
In here. How about that Paris, eh?
Oh, I rather enjoyed myself.
I rather did, too. Yeah, I've been there a dozen times now, and I never get tired of anything. Not anything, Mr. Dollar. The last trip,
You're
met...
You're a terrible old man.
Huh? Oh, Barbara, I didn't see you.
Obviously. Hello.
Hello.
This is my impish daughter, only child, spoiled rotten.
Barbara.
Johnny Dollar.
Just going to show Mr. Dollar the painting. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
You don't really like it, do you, Mr. Dollar?
Well, I really don't know much about it, Miss Saxton.
Barbara.
You don't care for it, Mr. Dollar?
Well, I guess it's very good.
Good? Dollar, that's an original Marshall! Oh!
They're beginning to call Dad the Hacking Sack.
Yeah, Hacking Sack. Nasty little brat, isn't she?
Who told you the painting was a forgery, Mr.
Sykes? A miserable little man named Lippert fancies himself an authority. Just jealous of what he is. Give his right clavicle for that painting. Ran around telling everyone how old Saxton got taken for 200 grand. Miserable little cuss.
You going to be in town long, Mr. Dollar?
Oh, stop rolling your eyes.
That's about as crude
and
as...
that eye rolling went out with high button shoes.
Who did you say sold you the painting?
Look out for her, Dollar. Get that tone. Are you going to be in town long, Mr. Dollar?
I want to know.
The painting?
I bought it from René Francois, most reputable dealer in Paris. He's only going to be in town till after they establish my painting's a forgery. Isn't that right, Dollar?
Who? René Francois?
You. I'm doing my best to save you from this designing female. Now, agree with me.
Oh, yeah, I'm only going to be in town
until
after...
Then you can stay for dinner.
He cannot.
Why not, Mr. Dollar?
Well...
Because we haven't got enough food.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
Now, you go on back to wherever you're staying, Mr. Dollar, and I'll get in touch the minute they finish with the painting. Now, take my word for it, Dollar. Quit while you're ahead. Stick around for dinner, and you end up a cripple.
Oh. Well, are you going to stay for dinner or not, Mr. Dollar?
He is not. Seems like a nice fella, but he never played polo in his life. How about it, Dollar?
No, just an occasional game of stickball.
What position?
Oh, mostly gutter.
Wonderful. I was a gutter man myself. Raised in Hell's Kitchen,
Mr.
you know.
Mr. Dollar, please stay for dinner.
No!
You can talk over old times. Bring back the good old days when you were out cracking skulls.
You were going to leave.
I am.
Then show Mr. Dollar a Saxon's word is as good as his bond.
Her bond. I'm a her. She.
Yeah, her. Sometimes I wonder. Come on, Dollar. I'll walk you to the door.
You don't have to drag him. Mr. Dollar.
Goodbye, Miss Saxton.
Please.
No! Look out! Getting better, but you're putting too much of a curve on it.
I hate you.
Come on, Dollar. You're quite a girl, huh?
Yeah.
There's nothing really wrong. Just spoiled. Got too much money. I'd ask you to stay, but you really seem like too nice a fella.
Well,
what?
Just well. At the moment, that's about as glib as I can get. I left the Saxton house, shook my head a few times to get my brain turned around, and drove back to New York in my hotel. There wasn't much for me to do until the experts examined the painting. So I showered, shaved, got dressed in my other suit, and called a few numbers I'd collected during several investigations to see if I could get what looked to be a dull evening back on its feet. I struck out three times and was dialing the fourth when... Yeah? Come on in.
Hello? May I come in?
Well, yeah, sure.
Hope I didn't interrupt an important call.
No. Sit down.
Thanks.
Where's Daddy?
Home. He wouldn't tell me where you were staying, so I found out who he was insured with. I had to call his lawyer. Then I called your insurance company.
Oh, I'm flattered.
I'm determined.
Daddy's liable to spank.
I don't think so. He's really not the general he tries to be. He blusters and lays down the law, and we butt heads.
And you get what you want?
If it's important enough.
Well, I'm sorry I spoiled your record.
You haven't.
Well, then my staying for dinner wasn't important.
Oh, yes. Very important.
Well, then you lose.
Mm-hmm. If you can't fight them, join them.
Well, that's a practical bit of philosophy, but I don't see quite how it applies.
I've had no dinner.
Uh-huh.
You wouldn't accept my home-cooked invitation, so now it's going to cost you.
My expense account just turned yellow.
Where would you like to take me to dinner?
Where would you like me to take you to dinner, shy Violet?
Maybe I'm not the most conventional type in the world.
I'll go along with that.
But I don't want to argue. Don't want to have to coerce you. Don't want you to do anything you don't really want to do.
You just want me to take you to dinner.
It's a nice way to start off an evening.
Yeah.
And you'll take me to dinner? Johnny?
Expense account item two, $22.78, dinner at a small Italian restaurant. I'm pretty sure the dinner was excellent, but I'm positive that Barbara Saxton was more woman than I'd run into in a long time. Delilah was a Girl Scout by comparison. We got back to the Saxton home in Jersey about 3 a.m, parked the car at the front door, and said goodnight.
I had a wonderful evening. Will you call me tomorrow?
Right after my 2 o'clock shock treatment.
Weren't you happy?
Well, I'm not quite sure.
I think we had a little too much to drink.
Who had a little too much to drink?
Okay. I had a little too much to drink.
You're fractured.
I love you, Johnny. Let's get married.
Come on, dear love.
Oh, I don't want to go in yet. I want to get married. Johnny, let's drive to someplace where we can get married.
No, I'm once more a clear-thinking, cautious bachelor.
I can fix that.
Now, while I'm conscious.
Want to bet?
Oh, come on. Be a good little girl. Get out of that car and let me walk you to the door or I'll scream for help.
You're mean.
The word is coward.
Yes.
Now, come on, dear.
No. All right. You're right. You're a coward.
But a single one. Now, come on.
Kiss me goodnight first.
Barbara.
Kiss me goodnight or I won't budge.
I'll kiss you goodnight at the front door.
It's a deal.
Where's your key?
First.
Now, honey.
You promised. The front door. This is it. Go, front door.
Okay. Good night, honey.
Let's get married.
We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Now!
Shh.
Now.
Honey, the door was open.
I don't want to go in. I'm not going to go
Barbara,
in.
Barbara, look.
No. I'm going to sit right down here.
Oh, no, you're not.
Oh, that's nice. Carry me, Johnny. Carry me to a minister and let's get married till death do us part.
There. You're on your own. Good night.
Johnny, you come back here. You can't leave me just standing here like this.
Drink a big glass of milk and get some sleep.
Johnny.
Good night. What the...
Johnny! Oh, Johnny!
What is it? What's wrong?
In the library, Dad!
What?
He's lying there, hurt his head. It's all bloody.
Friends, Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum is a refreshing, delicious treat you can enjoy just about any time. Even when you're busy working, you can slip a stick of Wrigley's Spearmint in your mouth and enjoy that pleasant chewing. The lively, full-bodied spearmint flavor cools your mouth and freshens your taste. The good, smooth chewing helps relieve pent-up tension, gives you satisfaction. As a result, you seem to feel more relaxed and get more enjoyment out of what you're doing. So enjoy chewing Wrigley's Spearmint Gum while you work, and at other times, too. Get a few packages next time you're at the store. That's Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. And now, with our star, John Lund, we bring you the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Barbara Saxton was hysterical. I had a slapper to calm her down. Then together we went into the darkened Saxton house, where I found her father, Alan Saxton, lying on the floor, bleeding from a nasty scalp wound.
Jack.
He's all right. Call a doctor. Well, come on, come on. Mr. Saxton.
You can't stop him.
Don't try to sit up.
What? The picture.
You all right?
Yeah. What happened? Oh, dollar.
Now you better stay right there until we get a doctor.
I'll just sit up. Oh, my head.
Oh, it doesn't look too bad. There's a lot of blood.
My painting.
Now just take it easy.
He got it. Look, it's gone.
Okay, but don't try to get up. It might be a concussion.
Dollar, he stole my painting. Cut it right out of the frame.
Who did?
I don't know. A man. I heard something and came down. Servant's night off. Shouldn't have been anyone down here.
What'd he hit you with?
A flashlight, I think.
Doctor, I'll be right over. Dead?
Traitor.
I thought you were dead.
I couldn't be. I'd feel better. You deserted me. Oh, for Pete's sake, stop that. I'm the one who got clobbered.
He nearly scared me half to death.
Well, I couldn't help it.
What happened?
Some dirty lowlife swiped my painting.
No.
Well, look.
The marshal.
Yeah, caught him in the act. Would have captured him, too, but he crowned me with his flashlight.
Better get some hot water and a towel.
But they have to take 50 stitches.
Well, it's just a little cut.
It is not. It's good for at least 50 stitches.
Dear love.
Yes, dear love.
Get the hot water and a towel while I go call the robbery detail.
Yes, Johnny.
Wait. Yes, dear love. Yes, Johnny.
He took me to dinner.
Well, it's 3:30 in the morning.
3:35.
What day?
Tuesday.
What time did you finish dinner?
Look, while you're getting your suspicions up, the thief is putting a lot of miles between
dollar,
this house and
dollar,
the...
Dollar, answer me one question. She didn't get you drunk and get you to marry her.
I sure tried.
But you didn't.
No.
Oh, you're a lucky boy, Johnny.
Oh, don't look so smug. You just think everyone wants to marry me for my money.
Well, don't they?
Not Johnny.
I'm going to call the police.
Wait. Just one more question. If you married my daughter, would it be for her money?
In the first place, I'm not going to marry your daughter.
Johnny.
In the second place, if I did, it wouldn't be for her money.
See?
If I was going to marry her at all, it would be for your money.
Johnny!
Barbara got a towel and some hot water, and I called the police. I stuck around while old Saxton gave his heroic side of the incident. Then I took off and drove back to the hotel, where I put in a call to the Paris branch of the company. I talked with Howard Gilbert and asked him to check on the departure of René Francois, who, according to Saxton, wasn't expected to arrive in the States until late that afternoon. There had to be a good reason why anyone would steal a painting that had been publicized as a possible fake. Saxton wouldn't have the painting stolen, because without insurance, he'd just be out the $200,000 he'd paid for it. René Francois might have a reason, though. Because if the painting was proved a forgery, his reputation would suffer, not to mention having to return the $200,000 to Saxton. Well, Gilbert promised to wire the information regarding Francois' departure the minute he had it, and I left the hotel and headed across town to see an old friend, a continental stool pigeon with a way of knowing about such things as stolen $200,000 paintings. It was close to 5:00 when I rang his doorbell.
It is, you're just being ridiculous. Allez-y-vous.
Henri, open up.
Not by the hair of my little goatee. If I owe you money, come back at a respectable hour.
It's Johnny Dollar.
I don't believe it. Only my landlord or a vampire would go to such extremes.
Look, Henri, I'm going to slip a little something under the door.
Another 10 might convince me.
Okay, but you'll never go to heaven.
I'm convinced. Mon ami, entrez. I miss you, Johnny.
Are you that broke?
Well, until this windfall, I was completely fractured. But what can I do for you?
Some information.
Eh bien. Is this so important that you must seek me out before the sun has risen?
You ever heard of a Mr. Alan Saxton?
Saxton?
He's been in the papers. Well, a few hours ago, someone hit him over the head and swiped a very expensive painting.
Oh, is that the Saxon who recently purchased the supposed Marshall?
That's the one.
But there was some doubt as to the authenticity of the painting.
Experts were going to examine it today. He paid $200,000 for it.
Marshall? I would have painted him something far superior for much less.
Who do you think would pull a job like that?
Well, what is so special about a job like that? Break into a house, steal a painting? An amateur could handle it.
No, no. It's a special job for a special talent. The thief knew his Marchand. There were a lot of other paintings in that room.
Well, but he could read, couldn't he? Marchand certainly signed the work. Or if it's a forgery, whoever painted it certainly signed Marchand's name.
This painting wasn't signed. That's one of the reasons why there's some doubt about it.
Uh-huh.
Not only that, but why would someone take that painting when it's worthless until proven authentic?
Mm-hmm. You have a point.
I'm thinking of a European.
Oh, Johnny, I wouldn't touch a job like this.
Someone with an international reputation.
Please, Johnny, I am innocent. Mon ami, please believe me.
Someone who could possibly be hired in Paris, or if he happened to be in the United States, could be contacted. Someone that would know this particular Marchand and be qualified to break into the Saxton house. Henri?
Wait.
You have that knowing look.
Well, I was just thinking about my landlord. Sooner or later, he'll trap me. It's the law of average. So far, I've cleverly avoided this ingenious...
How much?
Pardon?
How much do you owe?
Oh, a paltry 2 months' rent, $40.
Okay.
Yeah, but what sense is there in paying when it will only provide me with a legal claim to this disgusting dwelling? And I have no sustenance to keep me alive for longer than a week.
Well, then just pay him for a week.
You would have me starve?
How much will keep you alive for 2 months?
Well, I would at least like to take care of Greenbaum's delicatessen.
$10?
Well, the exact amount is 15.
Oh, you're lucky I've got an expense account.
You think I don't know it?
All right, who is he?
Well, you might go to the Shelton Arms and inquire about a man named Gaston Chambray. It has been rumored that he arrived from Paris only yesterday.
Who is he?
Well, that is for you to discover. There are certain things I am bound by honor not to divulge. But any policeman in the world could help you out.
I left the little Frenchman and went back to my hotel, where a cable was waiting from Gilbert at the Paris office. It told me that René Francois had booked passage on Air France and was due to arrive late in the afternoon. I left, climbed into the rented car, and drove to the Shelton Arms on East 108th Street, where a sleepy night clerk gave me Gaston Chambray's room number and accepted a $10 bribe not to inform Chambray that I was on my way up.
Who is it?
A cable for you, Mr. Chambray. It's from René Francois.
How do you know that?
I peeked.
You are not a messenger boy?
Sure I am. I've got a message from René Francois.
Well, give it to me.
He says to give me the painting. Oh. I'm coming in.
You have no right to come in.
You got something to hide?
Get out of here before I call the police.
Oh, no, I'll just stick around. But if you want to call the police, why don't you go right ahead? Maybe you'd like to tell them where you were earlier this morning.
I was right here in my room. I have been in my room since early last night.
You didn't take a short trip over to Jersey?
I certainly did not.
You arrived from Paris yesterday, huh?
Yes, but what has... Oh, police. You are a policeman.
I'm surprised you didn't decide that when I pushed my way in here.
I have done nothing.
But you know René Francois.
Yes, but I know nothing about a painting.
Now, look, I know all about you.
Of course, but you can't prove anything.
You want me to tear this apartment to pieces, or do you want to hand over the Marchand?
I told you I have no painting.
I just said Marchand. That could be something you shampoo your hair with.
You mentioned a painting, then Marchand. Any fool would know they are one and the same. As for your tearing my apartment to pieces, as you so crudely put it, I think you would be making a serious mistake.
Really?
You have no warrant.
Well, now you're making a serious mistake.
Really?
I don't need one. You're still going under the assumption that I'm a policeman.
You are not?
No, not a bit. All right, get up. Now, where's the painting?
Who sent you?
I sent myself. Now, where's the painting?
Okay. No, no. Wait a minute. It's under the pillows on the couch.
Uh-huh. Why did you steal it? Maybe you didn't understand me.
No. All right. I was hired.
Sure you were. René François?
Yes.
Okay. Now, as long as you're so suspicious about policemen, put on your clothes. I'll take you downtown, introduce you to a few of the gentlemen in blue. Gaston Chambray gave a complete confession to the police. He'd been hired by the Paris art dealer, René François, to steal the painting, had been discovered by Alan Saxton, and in order to make his escape, was forced to clout the old boy on the skull with his flashlight. René François was met at the plane, and when confronted with the evidence, readily confessed. He explained that when the Marchand was proclaimed a possible forgery, he realized that if it really was, his business would be ruined, and he would have to return the $200,000 to Saxton. He checked with the sources that had originally sold him the painting and discovered that there was a strong possibility that the painting was a fake. He offered Chambray $10,000 to do the job. He'd arrive in the States after the robbery, offer his condolences, meet Chambray at a predetermined spot, and take the painting. Well, Saxton took it in stride, and after Francois gave him back the money, he even laughed about it.
You really did a fine job, Dollar. I'd like to make it worth your while.
Well, it'll just cost you the $85 I paid out in bribes. The rest goes on the expense account.
Johnny.
Oh, you look pretty bad.
Terrible hangover.
Johnny, don't be mean. You're responsible for this.
You got my $200,000 for me. It was that Francois. He was behind the whole thing. Some guy named
Daddy.
Jim. Well, don't you want to hear about it?
Johnny, will you take care of me? I need somebody to take care of me.
Oh, dear love, I'd love to.
Really?
But I've got to get back to Hartford.
I can be packed in an hour.
Oh, there you go with that eye rolling again.
I'm not rolling them. They're rolling themselves. I have absolutely no control whatsoever, Johnny. Dear love.
Yes, dear love.
Can I go with you?
No.
Why not?
Well, I'm an insurance man.
What's the matter with that?
Oh, nothing. Only I know a bad risk when I see one.
Johnny, I'm not a bad risk.
No, but I am.
Ah, bad. Here, have a cigar.
Expense account item 3, $55.85, hotel bill and car rental. Item 4, $19.65, train fare and incidentals back to Hartford. Expense account total, $119.93. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, friends, Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum is a refreshing, delicious treat you can enjoy just about any time. Chew a few sticks of Wrigley's Spearmint during the day and see how the good chewing helps you keep feeling fresh and alert. The lively, full-bodied flavor of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum cools your mouth, freshens your taste, and sweetens your breath. The chewing itself gives you a nice little boost, helps you keep going at your best. Millions of people get real chewing enjoyment out of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum every day, and we know you'll enjoy it, too. Get a few packages and always keep some handy. That's Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, brought to you by Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, stars John Lund in the title role and was written by Blake Edwards with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Featured in tonight's cast were Edgar Berrier, Hal March, Virginia Gregg, and Jay Novello. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, was transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum hope you enjoyed tonight's story of Johnny Dollar and that you're enjoying delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day. This is Charles Lyon inviting you to join us again next week at the same time when from Hollywood, John Lund returns as...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Death at 7:10. Yes, we have that Crime Club book for you. Come right over. Ah, you're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The book is on this shelf. Here it is, Death at 7:10 by H.F.S. Moore. The very intriguing story of a beautiful woman who was in love with death. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. The train was due to leave at 7:10 in the evening, and at exactly 8 minutes after seven, Mark Kent, a well-known mystery writer, was in drawing room B, his own drawing room, when the door opened. And he was surprised to see a young, beautiful woman. He was even more surprised at the way she giggled.
Hello.
Hello yourself and see how you like it. My name is Susan Ward Steele.
Well, I'm flattered, but haven't you made a mistake?
You're Mark Kent, the mystery writer. I adore mystery writers. Well, your pictures don't do you justice. How about getting me a drink?
Don't you think you've had enough?
Oh, be a good boy and get me a drink.
I better get you back to your compartment.
I'm going to Reno. A long trip. I saw you come on the train. I knew it was going to be interesting.
I'm not going to Reno.
You should have seen Gerald's face this morning when I said goodbye to him. He's my husband.
Mm.
Such a pain in the neck.
Look, Susan, do you mind...
And you should have seen Claire Ellis's face when I told her that I was going to marry Pierce Carlton.
Mm-hmm.
And my stepbrother, Robert Ward's face, when I wouldn't let him have the money.
Mm-hmm.
So many faces, and all so long.
Will you do me a favor, please?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Pierce will marry me. You just watch, Mark. In 6 weeks, when I come back from Reno, he'll never tell me again he's not the marrying kind.
Yeah, yeah.
How about that drink you promised me?
I didn't, Susan.
I want a drink. I've got to have a drink.
Later, please.
Anything. Water. Ginger ale.
Take it easy, kid. Take it.
I've never been so thirsty. Please. Water. Ginger ale.
All about Chicago and Points West.
Susan.
Albany, Prescott. All about...
No, no. Conductor. Conductor, hold the train. There's a dead woman on board.
4 days later, Mark Kent was in a room at police headquarters with Captain McNair, his friend. They were comparing notes, the results of intensive investigation and some speculation.
We start with the atropine, Cap. That's what killed her.
Yeah, one pill.
That's usually enough. Now, here's what the book says about atropine. Huh. An organic alkaloid which causes death in humans without coarse anatomical change.
No pain.
That's right. Symptoms include dryness of mouth and throat, giddiness, wild talk. Death usually takes place within 8 hours.
The coroner told me there's no set rule about that. It can happen in 6 hours, in 4 hours, in 1 hour. Mm-hmm. It can happen in 10 hours.
Well, we know from what Gerald Steele told us, Susan didn't get up until almost 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Cap, are you willing to do some speculating?
If it doesn't mess up the facts.
What facts?
All right, go ahead. But remember, you're not writing a book. This was a real murder, and I'm a real policeman.
Now, we've got a pretty good idea of the kind of man Gerald Steele is. There's no record that he ever had a job. His wife, Susan, was very rich.
So?
Okay. We know that she left a will giving him half her estate. And we know that she was going to Reno to get a divorce. Another man, Pierce Carlton.
Mm.
Now, Let's combine what Gerald told us about that morning 4 days ago and what, for reasons of self-preservation, he might have forgotten to tell us.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
All right. It's 11 o'clock. Susan Ward Steele has just gotten out of bed, and after the usual routine, she goes into the kitchen, where she finds her husband sitting before a big breakfast. She's a little annoyed.
Good morning, Gerald. Enjoying yourself?
Any objections to my being hungry?
Oh, no. I thought today you might have less of an appetite.
I'm not responsible for today, Susan.
Ham, eggs, toast, and coffee. Is that your first helping, dear?
Oh, nuts.
You don't say. You're so articulate. Where's Tommaso?
I told him to take the day off.
You told him?
Yes. What's the matter with that?
But, darling, you don't pay his salary.
I had no idea that we wouldn't want any strangers around the house today.
You're so sweet. But I'm not spending today with you.
Oh?
I'm having lunch with Robert, tea with Claire Ellis, and then... would you like to guess?
Cocktails with Pierce Carlton, the great send-off.
Don't be so bitter. He works for a living.
Sure.
Well, at least he has an office. Pour me some coffee, please.
Yes. You want eggs, too?
No, just black coffee without sugar. A full cup.
You must have had a big night. Where'd Pierce take you?
Places. Lots of people. I heard you slept well last night.
Susan.
You were snoring when I came in.
Oh, for pity's sakes. First I get it because I'm eating. Now it's because I slept. You don't think much of me.
You're a parasite, Gerald. And you're beginning to look like one.
You don't care what you say, do you?
Oh, don't tell me that there's pride under that expanding waistline.
Just one more word out of you and I'll...
Yes?
What's the use? I can't take it. I don't want you to go.
Really? I'm thrilled.
If you go through with the divorce, I don't know what I'll do.
I know one thing you'll have to do. Get a job.
Huh?
Let me spell it for you. J-O-B. It's what people do for money.
What'd you ever do for yours?
I was smart. I picked a family with a rich uncle.
Sure, you can talk. You inherit $1 million. You're smart. Well, let me tell you one thing, Susan.
Don't bother, honey. I've got something much more important to tell you. I'm not leaving you any money to live on.
What?
And I'm changing my will.
I see.
The half of my estate that you've been praying for will go to Pierce Carlton, if I should die.
When do you perform the operation?
After Pierce and I are married. In the meantime, if I should get hit by a truck...
Yeah?
Oh, darling, don't wish so hard. I'm really being very loyal to you.
Yeah. Oh, well. What time's your lunch date with Robert?
1 o'clock. Good heavens, look at the time. I'll have to hurry. Takes me an hour to get my hair put up.
Do you want some more coffee?
Oh, I'd love it, but I can't spare a minute. Why didn't you tell me it was so late?
It's your appointment, Angel. You sure you don't want another cup?
Oh, dear. I really need it. All right. Bring it in the bedroom. No cream or sugar.
Yes, ma'am. Anything you say, ma'am. I aim to please.
There it is, Cap.
Gerald Steele had motive and opportunity.
You're only guessing, Mark.
Well, the will's on file, isn't it? We got the story of the second cup of coffee from Gerald himself.
Yeah, but the rest of the stuff, about the argument, about her changing the will.
Pure speculation. The deductions of a mystery book writer. Mm. Now, what about Robert Ward, the stepbrother?
He's about 15 years older than Susan, businessman.
How's business?
Well, we got a report from several banks that he's been trying to borrow money. They all turn him down.
Uh-huh, that makes him an interesting suspect. Now, let's combine fact and fiction again and see what happened at lunch. Robert Ward told us that he'd reserved a private dining room for the occasion at the Swank Cafe Aurelia. Susan was very cheerful all through lunch.
What time is your train, Susan?
7:10.
No, it's only 2:30 now.
I'm meeting Claire Ellis at 3:00. Tea and gossip at her apartment. Oh, I knew I shouldn't have eaten so much.
Susan.
Yes, Robert. I've been waiting very patiently.
What do you mean?
You didn't ask me here to a private dining room to discuss my unimportant life.
You're very clever.
Thanks, darling. Now, what is it that you don't want your servants to overhear?
I need money.
You?
I know it comes as a shock, but the truth is I've,
How much, Robert?
$100,000.
Really?
Of course, it'll be a loan, Susan. I'll pay it back in due time. I'll give you a note or a mortgage, whatever you like.
business is bad. Hmm?
I've had a very serious setback. My entire output of washing machine motors is defective.
Oh, my. What's the poor housewife going to do?
We know what's wrong, and we can correct it easily enough, but naturally it can't be done without money.
Naturally.
I've never been without cash before, but I expanded recently, and that took all my liquid assets.
Even when you're in trouble, you talk like a bank statement. When did this delightful thing happen?
2 weeks ago.
Why didn't you come to me right away?
Well, I didn't want to bother you. I'm a businessman, and naturally, my first call was at the banks.
Naturally. Did they turn you down?
They didn't consider me a good risk. Overexpansion.
Darling, you're as skinny as a toothpick.
Susan, please don't be facetious. I'm in serious trouble. Oh. If I don't get that merchandise out of my factory, I'll go bankrupt. I won't even be able to pay my creditors.
$100,000.
Yes, it shouldn't mean anything to you. You can spare it.
Oh, I can spare it. But tell me, Robert, dear, when did you ever do anything for me?
Now, don't refuse me.
You preached. Called me a fool for not putting my money into a good, sound business. A wild, empty-headed fool.
I tried to make you realize your responsibilities. Uncle Jeffrey left his money to us in good faith. It was our duty to protect it.
I still got mine.
And I've got mine in factories, machinery, and merchandise. Now I'm asking you to help me liquidate it.
No.
Good Lord, Susan, how can you be so heartless?
I've been practicing.
But... Very well, I'm not going to beg you.
Don't give up hope, dear. I've taken care of you in my will.
Thanks to Uncle Jeffrey, you have no choice. Half of your estate must go to me.
And half of your estate should go to me. But where is it?
You can look for it after I'm dead. Oh, what in the name of thunder did I do with those things?
What things?
My pills. My box of pickup pills. Oh, here it is, my vest pocket.
So you've come to that, huh?
Just these last 2 weeks, doctor's prescription. I've been living in the devil's own basement, tired and depressed.
What do they do for you?
They give me a pickup, that's all. Get the tired feeling out of my system, clear my head. Perfectly harmless.
Sounds interesting.
Would you like one?
Why not? I had a big night, and I've got a bigger day ahead of me.
One pill will keep you going for hours. Flip it into the back of your mouth and wash it down with water.
After you, darling.
Very well.
I never take chances. Well, here's to you. How soon before it starts functioning?
Very soon. And now I think we ought to go, Susan. I don't want you to be late for your appointment with Claire Ellis.
Well, it's a possibility, Ken.
Oh, sure, sure. So is a trip to the moon. You better stick to writing mystery books, Mark. If you make a mistake, nobody burns, except maybe your publisher.
Did Robert Ward take a pickup pill while you were grilling him 3 days ago?
Now, wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me he had a box full of atropine pills when he met Susan Steele?
Maybe.
And that he passed them off as pickup pills?
Maybe.
But according to your own speculation, he took one of those pills himself. Now, why didn't it kill him?
You might have had one in that box that was harmless.
Huh?
You know, a real pickup pill.
Sure, sure. Put that in your next bookmark. It'll read fine.
I will.
But for the time being, you won't mind if I keep it a secret from the district attorney, will you?
No, I don't mind. Shall we go on?
Go ahead. I'm on 24-hour duty.
Well, the next stop that Susan Steele made was Claire Ellis's apartment. Now, what do we know about Claire?
She served tea and ice cream cake.
But not because she liked Susan.
Oh, you've got a private line to her inner thoughts, huh?
Didn't you notice how she was defending Pierce Carlton as you were questioning her?
I noticed it.
Yeah, he's the man Susan Steele expects to marry. And Claire's in love with him. Now let's see what we can get out of the situation in which two women in love with the same man meet for tea a few hours before one of them dies on a train, the victim of murder by slow poison.
I'll get the tea things, Susan. They're in the kitchen.
Oh, there's no rush, Claire. I'm not meeting Pierce until 5. The lovely, romantic orchid room. I told the sweet boy I must have orchids on our wedding day. Slews and slews of them.
Susan, you know why I asked you here?
Of course. To plead with me.
We used to be good friends.
Used to be? I'm sorry to hear that, honey.
Susan, don't marry Pierce Carlton. He doesn't love you, Susan. Pierce and I were practically engaged when I introduced him to you. Why did you make a play for him? You had a husband.
I was smitten.
You were smitten.
Believe me, darling, I've been living in a delayed paradise for 3 whole months.
You've never loved anyone but yourself, and the only reason you went after Pierce was because he was mine. He was a conquest.
Does it make any difference?
You'll never be able to keep him, Susan. Pierce is in some kind of trouble. You have money.
Did he tell you all about it? Well, he told me. Doesn't that prove something?
Well, what is it, Susan? What's wrong with Pierce?
It's confidential, dear. Between sweethearts.
I'll get the tea if you still want it.
Oh, I want it. I'm a glutton for punishment.
I hope you won't have to take much more of it. Ever.
Why not? Hello, and don't keep me waiting.
Oh, it's you.
Of course, Gerald. Are you surprised to hear I'm still breathing?
Where's Claire?
Oh, she's downstairs sweeping the sidewalk. She pays off the back rent that way.
I'd like to talk to her, please.
Oh, she can't be disturbed.
Now, look here, Susan.
But I can give her a message.
Ask her to call me back.
No love and kisses?
Not yet. I was only thinking we might go for a walk in the park.
A walk? How thrilling. Gerald, darling, when did you give up driving?
Oh, nuts.
You might have held that phone for me, Susan. Who called?
Pierce. He simply had to tell me how much he loved me. Claire, dear, watch your manners. Trays were meant to be put down, not dropped.
I'm sorry.
And those exquisite ice cream cakes. You almost ruined them.
That one's for you, Susan.
Thanks, dear, for remembering that I adore blueberries.
I never forget a lot of things.
Motive and opportunity. Love and ice cream cake. Hey, Mark?
Well, that's how it looks on paper, Cap.
You think Claire Ellis buried the atropine in the cake?
Oh, she did. She's darn clever. But I don't know anybody who chews ice cream.
If she did. Now, how do you figure out the business about that phone call?
Well, Claire Ellis told us that Susan had received a call from Pierce.
Go on.
Pierce denied it, but Gerald admitted that he phoned Claire and spoke to Susan.
Mm-hmm.
Claire didn't know about the call, therefore Susan told her it was from Pierce Carlton.
QED.
Whoops, not yet, Cap. We've still got to prove a murderer. Now, what about Pierce Carlton?
He's in the stock brokerage business with his father. Good, solid family background, old stock.
And that doesn't keep him from being a playboy, does it?
I'm not interested in what he does, Mark, only in what he did 4 days ago.
And in what he did before then.
That goes without saying. My boys are checking.
I think they're going to find that he's in a mess. A money mess.
Anything's possible with you around.
Okay. What happened the day we spoke to Claire Ellis?
Your eyes popped. You saw a beautiful woman.
Could be, but she was upset. Every time you mentioned Pierce Carlton, she had jitters. Why?
Somebody told me she's in love with the guy.
I told you, Cap.
Sure, I knew. I couldn't have gotten it from the facts.
She kept saying over and over that Pierce was innocent. He had no reason for killing Susan. Cap, that girl knows something.
So does everybody else in this case, except me.
About Pierce Carlton, I mean. And I'm sure she didn't know it the day Susan was killed.
Who told her?
I don't know.
What? Mark, did I hear right? Did you say you don't know?
Let's go on to item number 4. Susan and Pierce at the Orchid Room. Dinner before train time. Soft lights, orchids on the table. A perfect setting for romance.
Darling, darling, 6 weeks. 6 long weeks without you.
You'll get used to it.
Don't laugh at me, please. I'm going to miss you terribly.
There's a lot of excitement in Reno. And cowboys.
Yes, how can you say that to me?
Don't you like cowboys?
I like you better.
How was Gerald this morning?
Oh, why talk about him?
Why not? He's human.
What's the matter with you? You'd rather talk about everyone but us. It's a wonder you don't ask me about Claire. You know, I saw her this afternoon, too. Or don't you have to ask me about her?
You never could take kidding, could you?
Oh, I didn't realize. Pierce will be married just as soon as I can get back from Reno.
Have some more wine, Susan.
You'll be waiting for me at the station. I don't want to come back to New York and be alone for a minute.
Suppose I'm not waiting.
But you've got to be.
Why?
Because I'm depending on you. I'm going through a divorce for you.
For me? I thought it was because Gerald ate too much.
Pierce, would this come under the head of what you call kidding?
Put your head on my shoulder and I'll tell you a secret.
I'd rather look you straight in the eye.
I've been doing a lot of thinking.
Yes?
I've come to the conclusion that Gerald is a nice guy.
What does that mean?
You ought to stick with him. You know, till death do you part.
You didn't think so last night.
I wasn't thinking last night, honey. The whole process started this afternoon. I woke up and there was a vision of a wedding bell. It scared the wits out of me.
You're out of luck, Pierce. I'm not letting you out of your promise.
Look, Susan, be sensible. Marriage and I were never meant for each other. I'm just not the marrying kind.
No? Put your head on my shoulder, and I'll tell you a secret.
I'd rather just keep sitting beside you.
Do you remember a certain crying jag that you had on a couple of weeks ago?
Susan, I've never been drunk in my life.
You were that night. And you told me a whole lot of things that you're going to regret in just about a minute.
Suppose you tell them right back to me now.
You lost a lot of money on a gambling boat before I met you.
Huh?
You paid off in IOUs. And when the gambler got tired of waiting for the cash, he threatened to see Papa. That's when you became a thief.
Good Lord, Susan, what are you talking about?
You took bonds out of your father's safe. He's got so many of them, you were sure they'd never be missed.
I told you that?
Your conscience was bothering you. Bet you didn't know you had one.
It's a sense you haven't.
No, dear. I might really like meeting your father, telling him about those bonds.
Yeah?
I'm so glad you'll be waiting for me when I get back from Reno.
Yeah.
Come to think of it, not every woman wants to marry a thief.
Oh, I'm lucky, huh? All right, let's celebrate with a drink.
Friends?
What else? You hold all the aces.
Then we'll drink to that.
Oh, no. Don't waste it that way.
What's wrong?
Let's lock arms. Then I'll drink out of your glass and you'll drink out of mine.
Why, of course. Just like real sweethearts.
Yes, dear. There's nothing like good old sparkling burgundy for launching a new life. Properly.
There it is, Cap. The last episode.
And you finish it with the old switch trick, the atropine pill in Pierce Carlton's glass. I'm surprised at you, Mark. It's corny.
Well, it happens to be true, poison or no poison. Found out about it only this afternoon.
You don't say. Who told you?
A waiter in the orchid room. He saw them lock arms, and he remembered for $10.
What? You give me the name of that guy. I'll have him brought in here, and
easy,
I'll book him.
Cat, easy. Oh.
Hello, Captain McNair talking, homicide. That's all right, Finley. Go ahead. What? Are you sure? Mm-hmm. Okay. Check in at headquarters and file a report. I'll take care of the rest. What sign of the horoscope were you born under, Mark?
I don't know. Why?
Well, you're either very smart or very lucky. Pierce Carlton lost $80,000 on Jimmy Bryson's gambling boat 4 months ago.
Uh-huh.
Finley just got it from Bryson himself. The debt's been paid.
That's how it is, Cap. When you go by character, you can't go wrong.
Maybe I ought to have a little more respect for you, huh?
Well, just read my books and I'll be happy.
Yeah.
Now, let's see. We've got four suspects. Gerald Steele, the husband who was going to be left holding the empty bag.
And who was still in the will for half of the fortune.
Right. Mm-hmm. Robert Ward, the stepbrother who needed money and was turned down. He's in the will for the other half.
My money's on him.
Maybe. Claire Ellis, the lovesick rival, and Pierce Carlton, who didn't want to get married but who talked too much to Susan. Every one of them had motive and opportunity.
What does your imagination advise us to do now?
I got an idea, Cap. Hmm? Can you get me a sample of Susan Steele's handwriting?
Yeah, her signature's on her will. I've got a copy of it over there in the case file.
All right, let's get the best handwriting man you've got, and then you and I will go to work catching a murderer.
Mm-hmm. Does your imagination tell you where?
Of course. At my apartment.
Mark, if this works, I'll buy you a new hat, and I'll eat your old one.
And you. I'm supposed to be all alone, Cat.
Hello?
Gerald Steele?
Yes?
This is Mark Tent. Are you free to talk?
What kind of a question is that?
You'll understand. I was the last one to see your wife alive.
So I read in the papers. You're also a friend of the police.
Only when it's convenient. For example, I didn't tell them that Susan gave me a note before she died.
A what?
There's a name in it, a murderer's name.
Look here, kid, what's that got to do with me?
It's for sale, Gerald.
I had nothing to do with Susan's death.
Oh, of course, but who's going to believe it?
Does that note give my name? Is that what Susan's done to me?
I'll be in my apartment until 7:10, Gerald. You're going to inherit a lot of money. I'm sure you'll want a partner to help you enjoy it.
You certainly got your nerve with you, Mark.
I've also got you for protection, Cap. Now we'll just do a repeat performance on Robert Ward.
And then we'll go down the line. Claire Ellis and Pierce Carlton. One of them's liable to bite. Stay in that other room, Cap, and don't wait for gunfire.
Don't worry about me, kid.
Mm. Yes, I heard you the first time. Hello, Miss Ellis. Come right in. Would you mind if I called you Claire?
I want that letter, Mr. Kent.
You wouldn't mind. And I thought this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
All I want from you is that letter. I've got a gun in my handbag, and I'm not afraid to use it.
I didn't think you would be. How much money did you bring?
I didn't bring any. Well, Mr. Kent?
I've got the answer, lady. Oh. And I'll take the handbag, too.
I didn't kill Susan. Now, please, give me a chance to explain.
Sure. Come on.
No. Pierce told Susan that he wasn't going to marry her. And I know she put his name on that letter.
You don't have to protect that guy anymore.
He told me the whole story the day after Susan died, about her threat and why she threatened him. I made him tell me.
Yeah, let's go.
No, please.
Somebody wants to come in here, Cam.
Another one?
Here's a magazine. Take Claire into that other room and read the advertisements to her.
Yeah, come on, you. When that guy works in a case, you never know what's going to pop next.
Coming. Oh.
Get out of my way, Kent.
With pleasure, but I'd be glad to do it, even if you didn't have a gun. Mr. Ward?
Are you alone?
Now that you're here, practically.
I don't trust you. Put up your hands and walk toward that other room.
Oh, you're kidding, aren't you?
Move along. I'm not going to waste any time on you.
All right, but since when do blackmailers work with an audience?
Just walk directly in front of me and into that room.
I'm in.
You're a bigger fool than I thought, Mr. Kent. You should have protected yourself with a lie.
Well, we all make mistakes, Mr. Warren.
You've made your last one. I'm going to kill you.
Don't you want that letter?
I'll find it later, or I'll burn your apartment out of existence. I've got a right to my share of Susan's estate, and the law won't take it away from me now.
So it was you who killed her?
Of course. I needed money for my business, and she refused to lend it to me, the fool. No intelligence, as she'd have known I was prepared for every emergency.
Yes, I sort of had that figured out.
This box of pills, pickup pills, a wonderful tonic. Unfortunately for Susan, the one I let her pick was atropine.
Don't look now, Mr. Ward, but there's a man behind you.
Drop that gun. Drop it. Captain McNair. Yeah, with bracelets you can't buy at Tiffany's.
You should have looked when I told you, Mr. Ward.
Well, sure. Well, Mark, it gets me how you figured this whole thing out.
I'm a dreamer. Would you like to take care of my old hat now?
Your old hat? What do you expect me to do with it?
You said you were going to eat it, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. But I said I'd buy a new one first. Well, a deal's a deal, but I hope you won't mind waiting. I know I won't mind.
And so closes tonight's Crime Club book, Death at 710, based on a story by H.F.S. Moore. Stedman Coles did the radio adaptation. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Raymond Edward Johnson played the part of Mark Kent. Helen Shields was Susan Ward Steele. Cameron Poudon was Captain McNair. Ted Osborne played Gerald Steele. Eleanor Phelps was Claire Ellis. King Calder was Pierce Carlton. And Reese Taylor was heard as Robert Ward. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello? I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. Good. We have the very exciting story of a night that was made for fun and remade for murder. It's called Coney Island Nocturne. In the meantime? Well, in the meantime, there is a new Crime Club book available this week. And every week at bookstores everywhere. Yes, it's available now. Fine. And we'll look for you next week.
This program came from New York. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That's case closed for this week. If you want to find more from Johnny Dollar Crime Club,
More from Case Closed or all the other podcasts, just visit RelicRadio.com. You'll also find a link there to our Shoutcast stream and a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your donations make this all possible. Thank you, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.